This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about Cadbury.
Yes, not a sponsor.
Nope. Just a very large chocolatier and et cetera company that, yeah. I mean, so
pretty associated with Easter
in the United States, certainly, and other places also, but perhaps to a lesser extent. I feel like that is the brand's largest association here in the U.S. Yeah. And as Easter is coming up as we record this, yeah, I was like, oh, sure, let's do this mammoth, wild outline that I could have kept reading for another 2 days.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, Lauren, because I feel like here in the U.S., Cadbury, we know what it is. And I guess I should say, I'm speaking from my anecdotal perspective, but we know what it is, but it's a bigger deal in other places.
Yes, it
is. A much bigger deal than I was anticipating. But yes, I did write a note in here, my Easter thoughts, all caps.
Because
I've shared them before. I like Easter. I like Easter egg hunting a lot.
Okay.
I would say from a very young age, I had my suspicions about the Easter bunny, but that's fine.
Hold on. I need to know more about this. Specifically, what kind of suspicions? Because when normal people say suspicions about the Easter Bunny, I assume that they mean that he probably isn't real and that that's your suspicion. But when Annie Reese says that, I'm like, do you suspect that he's a vampire? Like, do you like what kind of?
I just thought something was amiss about the Easter Bunny.
I see.
But it was just funny because from very, very young, I was all in on like the tooth fairy, like all kinds of things, these mystical creatures. But the Easter Bunny from like the get-go, I was like, I don't know. I don't know about this. I did love the getting of the Easter eggs, which my family was very big in, and they had to institute a rule around me because I was too eager about it, and I would just, like, run ahead and take all the Easter eggs, and no one else would get any, and anyway. As I said with Halloween, I'm not, the candy is not what I like. I like the competitive getting of things. I would give away the candy. You can have it. I don't care about that part.
Wow.
So I'm not like Cadbury eggs, which is what I associate with Easter.
Like the Cadbury cream eggs specifically?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, I could probably count on two hands how many times I've had that. Like, I would just give it away. I didn't.
Wow.
It wasn't my thing.
Okay.
Even though I didn't dislike them, it just was like, I was more secondary about how many eggs can I get.
Okay. I need y'all to understand that, like, if it's not, I think it's coming through on audio, but Annie's face is very intense as she is describing the fervor with which she hunted down these eggs. I don't know, on kind of the flip side, if I ever attended an actual Easter egg hunt kind of situation, like an out, like a big outdoors one, which is, I think, the kind that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, like my parents would like hide Easter eggs around the house, but that was, but maybe like a dozen or so, like it wasn't a really big deal. So I don't have that experience in my background. Uh-huh. And I do love a Cadbury cream egg. They're real weird. Just that goo is so not good, but like delightful. I don't know. I can't eat like a whole one in one sitting. Certainly not anymore. They're way too sugary for me now. But no, they're one of the few like holiday candies that I do still have like a ping of nostalgia for when I see them in a shop. Like around this time of year, I'm like, do I need to buy myself a Cadbury egg? For a long time, I did.
See, now I'm wondering, are you talking about like the... Because the ones I'm thinking of are like M&M peanut sized.
Oh, no.
Are you talking about the bigger ones?
I'm talking about the big ones.
Oh, okay. Got you. Okay. Yeah. Because I was like, you can't eat like the M&M peanut sized ones. Oh. I got you. Either way, do what you need to do. I just wanted to clarify. yes. Well, you can see our chocolate episodes. I think hot chocolate is particularly relevant for this one.
Sure. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes. We did talk about Easter eggs.
Yeah. We did a whole episode on Easter eggs.
We did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But from what I understand, we haven't done one on Peeps. I know we've talked about Peeps.
Yeah.
But I searched it and I don't think we have done one.
I thought we had, but you are correct. We have not.
Wow. Well, that's a year from now. Talking about Peeps. I can't wait.
Maybe. I mean, maybe it's one of those things that I looked into briefly and there wasn't really that much there. And I was kind of like, well, maybe we can do like I don't know. I'd have to. I have no idea.
Well, I think there's plenty to talk about, especially with the microwaving of the Peeps. Oh, my.
Sure.
There's a lot we could dig into. That's for future us, though.
Yeah, not a problem for today.
No. The problem we have for today brings us to our question, I guess.
It does.
Yes. Huh. Cadbury. What is it?
Well, Cadbury is a brand of mostly chocolate-based candies, confections, and snacks that operates worldwide. Perhaps best known in the United States for their Easter-themed egg-shaped chocolates, their international product lines are wide, encompassing solid and filled chocolate bars and bites and hot and cold drink mixes and cookies, snack bars, and snack cakes. They are just massive. They have multiple sub-brands. They have a theme park. They are one of the largest chocolate brands in the world. It's like if Willy Wonka were an extra century old and had like really sold out. It's just for various communities around the world, Cadbury is a daily, familiar, nostalgic comfort food brand.
Wow. I hope listeners write in about this because this is not my experience, but I learned doing this research. It is the experience of a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, today they are owned by Mondelez International, which also owns all kinds of other snack and candy and drink brands, from like Ritz and Triscuits crackers to Sour Patch Kids and Trident gum. Perhaps most applicably, they also own Oreo, so you sometimes see co-branding with Cadbury and Oreo.
Mm-hmm.
And Cadbury's UK lineup is perhaps the widest. It includes, it's a savor list. It includes Dairy Milk bars, which are your basic chocolate bar in flavors like, I don't know, plain, triple choc, toffee walnut, chopped nut, crunchy bits, Oreo, mint Oreo, chocolate, biscuit and fudge, peanut caramel crisp, and fruit and nut. The fruit and nut being raisin and almond in this case. Mm-hmm. Then dark milk and white and caramel bars. Specialty bars like Chomp, Crunchy, Curly Whirly, Double Decker, Flake, Picnic, Twirl, and Wispa. Those, I don't know what most of those are. there's the sort of fancier Bourneville line. There are various buttons and bites. There are cocoa and shake mixes. There are boxed chocolates. They have brunch bars, which are granola bars, chocolate chip cookies and brownies, sandwich cookies, fingers, which are like chocolate covered rods, sort of like a Pocky kind of situation. Yeah. Mini donuts and chocolate clusters. Also, fries bars, chocolate cream, peppermint cream, and Turkish delight. Hoofda. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think I'm missing a few in there. If I've missed your personal favorite and you are mad, please feel free to write in. In the U.S., yeah, it's pretty much just those cream eggs that I mentioned at the top, which are sort of, I don't know, like a golf ball sized egg that's filled with like a fondant cream that's colored in white and yellow to look vaguely like an egg yolk. And it's one of those things that I feel like the more you describe it, the more completely wild it sounds, like an alien, like an absolute movie prop from a horror film. Uh-huh. But yeah, those also come in chocolate cream flavors and they're kind of caramel filled. Mm-hmm. Then there are the mini eggs, which is what you were talking about. These are like milk chocolate candy coated. There's similar ball-shaped candies themed for fall and Christmas. They now have the Caramello brand under Cadbury in the U.S. We also get a small number of Dairy Milk bars, fruit and nut, roast almond, Royal Dark, a couple like limited edition sort of things. Australia and India do have slightly wider ranges, but perhaps mostly also in like holiday themed limited seasonal lines. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I get the idea that outside of the UK, it's more a holiday based brand. But y'all write in and let us know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Please. Mm-hmm. Please. Well, what about the nutrition?
Don't eat brands.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, again, insert random horror idea here, but this is, you know, Halloween 3, you're watching the commercial, song is stuck in your head, uh-huh. The mask is on your face, and you melt into a pile of bugs. And if you haven't seen that movie, well, I recommend you check it out.
like the Cadbury cream egg, it doesn't make a lot of sense, and yet it and certainly you know it's bad for you, but it's still really pleasurable in a certain way.
It is. well, we do have some numbers for you.
Oh, heck, we do. Okay, so Cadbury has manufacturing plants in at least 10 countries. Its products are available in at least 40 countries. The top three markets are the UK, Australia, and India. In India, the sub-brand Dairy Milk alone holds over 40% of the chocolate market.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cadbury worldwide was making about $3.9 billion in net revenue a year as of 2018. And that number seems to be have been going up. They were making about $5.7 billion as of 2022.
Whew.
Yeah.
Whew,
yeah. Yeah. Mondelez is the like either second or third largest chocolate producing company in the world, right up there with Ferrero Group and Mars Wrigley. Mm-hmm. There, okay. This is a fun one. There is a Madbury Cadbury competition, I think once a year. I think only in India. I couldn't track down information about this happening in other places, but that doesn't mean it doesn't. Y'all let me know. But okay, this competition lets participants choose from thousands of ingredients to make a unique new dairy milk bar flavor. I read that there are 90,000 potential combinations, but I didn't check their math. I think this competition started in 2019, and there was an ad campaign for it for which they rewrote Modern Major General, like from Pirates of Penzance. Yeah. They recorded it with an 18-dude choir.
As they should.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. It's it's pretty good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It sounds excellent.
And I'm not gonna sing it for you today. I'm sorry. I don't think so. We'll see by the end of the episode. Maybe I'll come around. Okay. we do have some world records. Cadbury, Nigeria produced a 30-meter tall inflatable made to look like a jar of Bournvita drink mix, which is a brand of drink mix. So that snagged a record for being the world's largest inflatable jar.
Yeah.
Also, the Guinness record for the most Cadbury cream eggs eaten in 1 minute was set in 2014. It's held by a fellow from Canada, and he consumed 6 in a minute. Yeah.
Well, congrats.
Yeah.
Also.
Congrats to that guy. I'm pretty sure that that made me say out loud, "Oh no."
Well, here's a fact that made me gasp audibly when I was doing the research. Cadbury has a theme park.
Yeah.
And it's called Cadbury World, and it has rides. It has a Madame Tussauds wax museum, and it gets about 500,000 visitors a year.
They have a museum with nearly 2,000 bits of Cadbury memorabilia, including packaging and marketing items dating back to the 1890s. You can go with your school. They offer a bunch of different educational programs, including a science talk for key stage 4 students, which is like ages 14 to 16. And you can have afternoon tea with Cadbury characters. Cadbury has characters like the Caramel Bunny and Freddo, the frog, and Mr. Cadbury's parrot.
Oh, my.
Yeah. because, of course, I looked up the menu.
Yeah, you've got to.
Okay. For kids, the menu is finger sandwiches with ham or cheese or jam, plus potato crisps, mini cakes, and fruit skewers, and a choice of hot chocolate or juice. For adults, the menu includes finger sandwiches like salmon and cream cheese, ham and mustard, and cheese and pickle, plus cakes, scones, macarons, and a choice of hot chocolate, coffee, or an assortment of tea.
Well, it sounds lovely.
You know, I have to say, having no nostalgia for any of these characters, they look terrifying to me.
Oh, I can't wait to look them up then. I can't wait.
It feels very Silent Hill 3 to me personally.
Oh, old Robbie the Rabbit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, but not covered in blood. I mean, they're, you know. Perhaps clearly.
Covered in caramel.
Yeah,
just covered in raspberry
just covered
sauce.
In caramel. Oh, no. Oh, dear.
Okay. Well, I cannot wait to look that up then. I love how it's like you and I are on such a track that we take it Silent Hill 3.
Yeah. That.
That's just where we're going to
it's
go with it.
Very specific, but there we are.
There we are. There we are. Robbie the Rabbit. If you know, you know. well, we do have quite the history for you.
We do. But first, we have a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth.
Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, Sonser.
Yes, thank you.
So, yes, as we mentioned at the top of the episode, go check out the episodes we've done on chocolate, particularly hot chocolate, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Very relevant to this. So, the history of the Cadbury Company goes back to the early 1800s, back when manufacturers, especially in Europe, still weren't entirely sure what to do with cacao from South America, which is what we talked about in that hot chocolate episode specifically. Mm-hmm. Because generally speaking, at that time, it was used to make sort of a bitter, sort of oily health drink. At least in Europe, it was kind of promoted or touted as a health drink. Mm-hmm. Mostly because that's all people knew how to do with it. We really didn't have the technology to do anything else with it at that point. So with that health aspect in mind, the Cadbury family, who were Quakers, attempted to use this basis of cacao to make a nutritious alternative to alcohol. Yes. So their product was part of something that family member Deborah Cadbury would later go on to call Quaker capitalism. She wrote this whole book about Cadbury and their origins of it. And I used a lot of that in here. So keep that in mind.
And Quaker capitalism is a whole thing.
Yes.
We'll get into it a little bit, but please continue.
Yes. According to her, Quaker capitalism, which we will be talking about throughout this, basically meant like putting the idea of helping people first and profits second. It also meant things that to me read like, of course, but yeah, definitely at the time were not a given. Mm-hmm. But things like Saturdays off, pensions, benefits, free visits to things like doctors, which still is not a thing for a lot of us. But yeah. Eventually, again, according to Cadbury, they wanted to extend all of these things to the community at large, the community that was working with them, which manifested in so-called Quaker utopia towns. And one of the earliest
of these model villages was Bourneville, mm-hmm. Located just south of Birmingham in England. And it was first set up in 1893. So that's where, like, their original headquarters is. But let's unpack that a bit. Mm-hmm. So Cadbury details, as I said, the origin story in her book. And as she tells it, in the late 18th century, one of her ancestors, who was named Richard Tapper Cadbury, an English draper, sent his youngest son, John, to study a new arrival in Europe that was causing a lot of conversation. Cacao. So they were like, oh, what can we do with this? Mm-hmm. And of note, they were a wealthy Quaker family. So Richard believed that cacao could be the solution to those who indulged in things like gin, like an alternative to alcohol, and that it could be used to make this nutritious, non-alcoholic beverage that could just, like, going back to that Quaker capitalism where it would really solve a problem. And yeah, that, it would be this healthy thing.
An improvement in people's lives. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So in 1824, John opened a small shop selling drinking chocolate and cacao, just in general. In 1831, he decided to focus more on the manufacturing of these things and kind of made a small factory to do that. Okay, here's another thing I didn't know. I didn't know, but in 1854, Cadbury received a royal warrant to be the official manufacturers of chocolate and cocoa for Queen Victoria.
Yeah, the royal warrant system is a whole thing that we could get into. We're mentioning it like one other time, but I think, yeah, that's for another day. Basically, yes. Yeah, like you get to put the royal seal on your packaging, it's really great marketing. Or not, depending on how much people like the ruling monarch. I don't know.
Also true. Also true. Yes. All right. So when John's health was struggling, his sons George and Richard took the chocolate business over. And they really flipped it into a success with milestones like purchasing a Dutch cocoa press, which we've talked about, and launching what they called Cocoa Essence in 1866. This is like around the time they were doing chocolate solids that you could buy with spices in them for the first time. Mm-hmm. Yes. And they did all of this while taking on local chocolate competitors, including and perhaps especially local Quaker competitors that were also in the chocolate business. So Deborah Cadbury's book it focuses a lot on this, is what the chocolate wars, as they're called, as she called them. It did matter because there is a whole set of business ethics associated with Quaker capitalism. And this is a whole practice that has been in place since the Civil War. These ethics have been voted on regularly since, and it has a lot to do with wealth creation. Again, that's a different podcast, but it is related to what we're talking about. The idea was that wealth creation shouldn't be for profit, but for the good of the workers, as we said. Reckless debt was viewed as shameful. Advertising was also viewed as shameful.
Huh.
Yes. But the 20th century saw the beginning of these chocolate wars, as Deborah Cadbury called them, that eroded Quaker capitalism in this realm, at least. And this was in part due to increasing globalism and international competitors, increasing trade, improving technology, new players in the fields. And it did lead to a lot of these Quaker capitalists either going out of business or adapting their form of capitalism without the Quaker part as much. Yeah. And a piece of this whole thing was the passing of these businesses from their Puritan owners to public shareholders. You never know where the research will take you once again. Like, wow, okay. I did not know we'd be talking about Quaker capitalism in here.
Nope.
Yes, well, we are. In 1905, Cadbury released their Cadbury Dairy Milk.
Mm-hmm. They first used their trademark shade of purple in 1914. And I'm not being figurative about that trademark. Mm-hmm. More on that later.
More on that later.
And in 1915, they released their Milk Tray line of Buck's chocolates. And I got kind of confused by this, but some sources also suggest that they were behind the first heart-shaped boxes, like Valentine's Day heart-shaped boxes, that were first introduced in the 1860s, from what I read. And according to what I read, the company wanted to use up any leftover cocoa butter from their other products. And they leaned into the idea of shareable products they could market as romantic. And the boxes featured all kinds of imagery that we associate with Valentine's Day today, like flowers and Cupid. That seems pretty early to me, but that's what the sources say. Anyway, speaking of holidays, the Cadbury cream egg. All right. So the company was not the first to manufacture chocolate Easter eggs. These chocolate Easter eggs started appearing in Germany and or France at the start of the 19th century. J.S. Fry and Sons Limited, which was a major competitor, of Cadbury, and another Quaker capitalist company, they were the first to offer a mass-produced option in 1873, but Cadbury began making their own version soon after in 1875, and theirs came with this colorful foil wrapping that really set it apart. Yes, so they became the preferred chocolate egg for Easter, and a lot of people think it's because of that colorful wrapping. So
there you go.
Marketing, it matters. So this is one of those things I read in a bunch of places, and I was kind of like, huh, because I've never experienced a Cadbury flake bar, but Cadbury flake bars were allegedly invented via manufacturing accident in 1920.
There you go.
Yeah, just kind of, it's interesting looking. I would love to hear more about it from people who've had it.
What is it?
It kind of looks like, to me, like a Butterfinger, but without the, like, it's like the middle part of the Butterfinger is just chocolate.
Okay.
It's like flakes of chocolate that almost look like chips. I don't know. It's hard to describe. I've never seen it. But like I said, it came up in a lot of the research, and I guess it's very popular. Probably making people angry as they're listening to this. Yes, that's not quite what we strive for, but we do love hearing strong opinions, so yes. Please write in. all right, so Cadbury merged with J.S. Fry and Sons to compete with Roundtree, another Quaker capitalist business in the chocolate industry, in 1919.
Yeah, and Cadbury and Fry were a powerhouse. Like, by 1930, they were not merely Britain's largest candy maker. They were also the 24th biggest company in the country by stock market value. By 1935, they were the 29th largest employer in the country.
Wow.
Yeah. In 1923, they released the first cream-filled chocolate eggs.
Ooh.
Okay.
Yes. They opened their first overseas company in Tasmania, Australia in 1921, and then another in New Zealand in 1930. Allegedly, Cadbury in part inspired Charlie and the Chocolate Factory because they would send samples for kids to try at author Roald Dahl's school. In 1929.
The brand launched in India in 1948, though I don't think it really got big there until, like, new advertising pushes happened in the 1990s and early 2000s. Yeah.
And speaking of advertising pushes, with more widespread access to televisions for the general population, Cadbury started advertising on TV in the mid-1950s.
In 1955, Queen Elizabeth II granted Cadbury her own royal warrant. Like, it was like one of the first that she granted. So it's one of the ones that was held for the longest. After her recent death, though, it is unclear whether Charles is going to renew it.
Interesting. Okay.
In 63, they released the style of cream egg that we know and some of us love, contentiously love today. It was under the Fry's brand originally, but then would be rebranded to Cadbury in 1971. Fredo the Frog, meanwhile, was first created in Australia back in the 1930s by a rival brand. But the brand was bought out by Cadbury in 1967. So this is not a Fredo the Frog episode.
Oh, my.
Just wanted to put that in there. Yeah.
Of course. It's important. I can't wait to look this up. You know what else this reminds me of? Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my. Well, Cadbury merged with Schweppes. Yes, that one. In 1969. They would demerge in 2008. In the 1990s, I have to mention this, the company released the Spice Girls Dairy Milk Bar. The packaging is glorious. You have to look it up. That's it.
Okay.
No questions asked.
Sure.
But this brings us to a lot of legal stuff.
Not Ooh. About the Spice Girls.
No.
But
no, not today. No. All right, so Lauren mentioned this color purple earlier.
Mm-hmm.
In 2004, Cadbury attempted to trademark this purple color that they had been using with their advertising. They said that they used it to honor Queen Victoria, that they've been using it for almost two centuries. Nestle, yes, that one, countered them, arguing it would qualify as, quote, commercial advantage.
Okay.
Yeah. And the ensuing legal battle lasted for 4 years when the judge eventually sided with Cadbury, but Nestle was not done and brought the whole thing back to the Court of Appeal and won on what sounded to me like a technicality. They were kind of like, you didn't fill out the form correctly.
This would wind up going back and forth through various courts of appeals until 2022.
Wow.
And honestly, I don't understand enough about trademark law to explain it properly. But in the end, yes, Cadbury was allowed to trademark this particular shade of purple using particular language. The exact shade of purple is Pantone 2685C, in case that means anything to anyone. And according to some law blogs that I read, the ruling has brought clarity to UK color trademark law. So,
wow.
Thanks, Cadbury's and Nestle, for fighting it out.
UK color trademark law.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, other legal things. In 2009, Kraft Foods launched a very fraught and very public effort to purchase Cadbury. And there was a bidding war with Hershey. It was not pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And Cadbury was purchased for less than what they asked for, though it was still $19 billion.
Oof. Okay.
Yeah. But many viewed it as the loss of the last independent British chocolate company.
Yeah, Kraft didn't really help the situation because they like immediately made some really controversial decisions, like the closing one of the long-running factories in England to move work overseas. So,
right. And the public pushback in Britain was so strong that lawmakers introduced new laws to prevent the foreign takeover of local businesses. I think Ooh. Some of them were dubbed like the Cadbury Law, like just
like popularly
calling it
yeah,
that. Yeah,
sure. Interestingly, the purchase did lead to the merging of like all Kraft confectionery research into the Cadbury Science Center in Reading. Yeah. From which was born in 2011 a patent for temperature-resistant chocolate, which can stay solid in conditions up to 104 degrees Fahrenheit.
Whew.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
In 2012, Cadbury was the official treat provider to the London Olympics.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And that same year, the international snack and confection side of Kraft split off to become Mondelez International, of which Cadbury is a subsidiary. Here in the United States, though, Cadbury is licensed through Hershey's.
Oof.
Yeah.
Oof. When you pitched this idea, you did tell me there's going to be a lot of legal drama.
You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, these business episodes are always really fascinating in a way that is completely opposite of the type of fascinating that I think most of our episodes are. Yeah. It's like, hold on, let me get through some dry legalese now. But yes. Oh, but still, like, there's drama. It's great. Yes. It's great.
I mean, trademarking a color of purple. That's amazing. Oh, my gosh.
And, right, in an 18-year battle to do so. Yes. What? I mean.
Wow.
I mean, it's a nice shade of purple.
It is.
It is.
I really like it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well,
indeed.
All right. Annie is saying that because I have pasted in the lyrics to this Modern Major General rewrite for the commercial. Mm-hmm. So, all right, let's see how far I get. Okay. Let's add a little basil, apple, coconut, and licorice. We're mixing, rolling, poking, slopping, dipping, giving it a squish. Take handfuls, pinches, dollops, glops, and glugs, and throw them in the dish. From cinnamon to tarragon and almost anything you wish. Gummies, berries, lemongrass, or even something spicy-ish. A chocolate concoction that we all agree is quite delish. Now each and every person nationwide is going Madbury. Let's ponder and invent a scrumptious dairy milk for Cadbury.
Woo! Yay! Collapse and snaps for you. That was amazing.
Well.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry.
No.
Well, there we go. So, yeah, that was a whole thing that happened. It keeps going. The song continues to go. I am not an 18-dude choir, so I'm not. And I'm honestly really shaky on the actual melody of that song, as it turns out. But that is what we have to say about the Cadbury Company for now.
For now.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have some listener mail for you. But first, we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with... Easter Bunny. That fiend!
Were you concerned that he was going to take the eggs back? Like, what?
I thought it was all a big trick. It was some kind of... He was messing with my mind in some way.
Were you upset that the bunny was laying eggs?
That did confuse me. Okay. But I was more like, he shows up, he leaves these eggs about, and I'm not sure why.
No.
Then I gotta go find them, open them up. It felt kind of like when you, like in D&D, where like, ooh, gold. But you gotta question why.
Why it's there, yeah.
There's going to be some kind of negative effect if you just take that gold.
Okay. But you weren't worried about this with, like, Santa or the Tooth Fairy?
No. It was specifically the Easter Bunny.
All right. No, cool. Yeah, that...
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. You know? Something to examine later about my mind, my processes.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
That is certainly something that I cannot currently unpack for you. So
I understand.
Yeah. Goodness.
Clearly I'm still thinking about it because it's in all caps at the top of our outline.
Yeah.
Well, I'll deal with that later. In the meantime, Arik wrote, who has been binging.
Yeah.
Finally caught up. Looking back, the joy of cooking made me think about cookbooks that are common. I've never had that, but I've had a Better Homes and Gardens for almost 30 years. Really well worn. I have a feeling if you went through the U.S. and looked, if someone doesn't have Joy of Cooking, they probably have the Better Homes and Gardens. Mm-hmm. Cookbooks in general are just so interesting. My youngest got me a copy of I Dream of Dinner, So You Don't Have To, for Christmas, and it sounds kind of like The Joy of Cooking. It has a lot of stories around things. It does take some getting used to. While it has a list of ingredients to the side, it does not have the amounts. This forces you to read through the instructions to get the amounts. In a way, this is a good thing, as you have to read the whole thing. Cookbooks in general could be a whole series. There are so many cookbooks out there that people love. We have a beat-up copy of the Super Stealer cookbook that we use as well. On a different note, I'd love to see a combination show at some point with one of the ridiculous shows. I can only imagine how much fun that would be. Might as well also loop in the Stuff They Don't Want You to Know folks as well, since it is only one more. Oh, yes.
I've been on Ridiculous History a couple of times talking. I think I talked about butter in the early days. Like, I dropped some butter facts and then kind of vanished.
I feel like you did Nestle, didn't you?
Over on Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, I talked about bottled water and also about diamonds, which are two things that make me very angry. So that was fun.
I've been on Ridiculous History twice and Stuff They Don't Not Want You to Know once. But Ben Bolin, of course, loves talking about food. He's constantly giving us ideas. So he would be 100% down. I'm down. There's a lot of conspiracies around food. Sugar, I'm looking at you.
Oh, yeah. I've pitched to them an episode about the Miracle Berry drama that happened and, like, Big Sugar and how, like, maybe that guy almost got assassinated by Big Sugar for producing a product that can make tart things taste sweet without sugar.
Yep. I mean, we're here. They know where to find us. We know where to find them, you know?
I mean, do we?
Do that's true. Here's where it gets crazy. And also, yes, as we've been talking about in a lot of past previous episodes, I think you're right. I mean, we could do a whole mini series on cookbooks, but love these kind of like, if you go to every other house, there will be one of this or one of this or both of this. And your kind of church cookbooks or your local community cookbooks.
Yeah, totally. I do have a number of Better Homes and Gardens cookbooks in my personal collection.
Yes.
So some of them are just so, especially the like yearly ones that they were putting out for a while. I don't know if they still do or not, but they're just such a specific moment in time. And I really love food photography from cookbooks because, oh, it is stylistically telling about what was going on at the time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
In addition to the recipes that they choose to feature, it's like, wow, that is not something that we would print a photo of these days. Certainly not in that sepia tone, but okay.
They are. They're a snapshot, as we said,
yeah,
of what's going on.
Zach wrote, I was so excited to hear your episode about Brunost, as it reminded me of one of my favorite memories about my dad. He was in the National Guard, and in the early 90s, he spent some time stationed in Norway working with NATO at the Norway-Russia border. For a long time, I thought the only souvenirs he'd brought back were a reindeer skin and a couple of troll statues. My dad also has an incurable sweet tooth and consistent midnight cravings. One night, when I was in my teens, I woke up to the sound of him digging around in the kitchen. Imagine my surprise when I found my dad squirting Hershey's chocolate syrup into a bowl of freshly grated Kraft cheddar cheese. He told me that he woke up craving a cheese he'd had decades ago in Norway, and this was the closest he could come up with to simulate it. He called it a Gjetost. Gjetost, I think. Which I would later come to learn is the goat milk variety of Brunost. After I went to college in a larger town, I was able to find Ski Queen Brunost at a Kroger cheese counter, and my dad has had a block of Brunost on hand ever since. As for the chocolate cheese concoction, as bad as it sounds, I'll just say don't knock it till you try it.
Oh, I won't.
You won't knock it or you won't try it?
I won't knock it. I bet I can see it working. I used to make a kind of, again, it sounds like something that wouldn't work, but I would make like this grilled cheese that had brie and chocolate in it, and it was really good.
Ooh, okay.
So
yeah.
No, I'm into it.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I'll try pretty much anything.
Yeah, me too. This was lovely. Yes. Lovely memories. I looked for Brunost last time I was at the grocery store.
Yeah.
I didn't see it, but I feel like, because I have recently been on a really big Indian food kick. I think I mentioned that recently. And I've been looking for paneer for forever, and it was right in front of my eyes the whole time. So sometimes I think you just need to see like the packaging of the cheese. So maybe I'll look up like some of the big brands and then I'll have an image in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm on the look. I'm on the lookout.
I feel like, yeah, it might not be in like common, like American branded grocery stores, but it might show up in more like an Aldi situation, or maybe like a Whole Foods situation, like something with like a slightly more international cheese counter.
Okay. All right. I think I can make this happen.
I hope you
but
do.
I do. I oh yeah. I'm sure that I will. I'm sure that I will. But yes, in the meantime, thank you. To these listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@savorpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SavorPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Savor is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks as always to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.